On today's episode of the Trial Run Podcast, Carmelo Anthony is back. We have breakout NBA sophomores, lots of college topics, and a little bit of NFL to talk about. A bit of a weak schedule today, but it's going to be great because we're great. This is the Trial Run Podcast. Brennan, everybody's least favorite member of the Banana Boat crew.
That's actually factual.
Is back.
That's factual.
He is back. Carmelo Anthony is back in the NBA, the National Basketball Association. We missed him so much, did we not?
We really did, honestly. Carmelo Anthony, you bright, shining ball
of something.
Of mediocre play.
Carmelo Anthony is back in the NBA, I guess is happy for it. He is suiting up for the Portland Trail Blazers, played in his first game, I believe, two nights ago. And this was the big storyline. Like we said, a very weak lineup in the sports world this past week.
This truly was, I think, the biggest storyline of the week.
Which honestly is a bit tragic because when you think of Carmelo Anthony, you do not want to think that that is the biggest story. He is the single biggest star from the entire week. But it happened. He suited up for the first time since November of last year on Tuesday. He played pretty well, all things considered. He continued that into Thursday. He dropped 18 points on the Milwaukee Bucks. He's functioning off the bench, Brennan. Can this possibly work out for the Portland Trailblazers this season?
I mean, who knows? I mean, you know my take on
That's the most lukewarm take I've ever heard.
Well, I mean, here, if you want a hot take, you've heard it before. I may have even said it on this podcast before. My boy Kyle Korver has had a better career than Carmelo Anthony, and you can take that to the bank. I don't think Carmelo Anthony is an elite player by any stretch of the imagination. I think he was decent to good player throughout his career. Maybe he can turn that around and rewrite the narrative with this fresh start in Portland.
Okay, let's be honest here. Anything that Carmelo Anthony hasn't already done, he's not going to accomplish in Portland. Like, he's going to be a bench player, maybe a six man at best. He's not going to do anything that he hasn't. But I think I'm going to pump the brakes on you calling him a decent at best player or whatever you just called him.
He's decent at best.
I'm going to pump the brakes on that because he's far above average. I'll say that right now. And I don't even know if that's your take right now. I don't know why you have this next bullet point on here because I'm pretty sure I know your answer.
Because I just want to hear what you have to say.
Is Carmelo Anthony a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done? Please just reiterate what you just said.
Well, actually, you know what? I'm fine with putting Carmelo Anthony in the Hall of Fame so long as you put Kyle Korver in the Hall of Fame too.
Does Kyle Korver have the international success that Carmelo Anthony has?
The international success?
Go look at his Olympic medals. Please go look at that.
Okay, that doesn't factor into the NBA Hall of Fame. Oh, that simply does.
It's Brennan. It's the Basketball Hall of Fame. It has nothing to do with the NBA.
Wait, can
yes.
That's breaking news to me.
It is the Basketball Hall of Fame. Look it up.
I guess you learn something new every day, even as the host of a sports show.
Oh my God.
Well, okay. Well,
that's the. Oh, happy I just exposed you on that.
Let me put it this way: which one is the better looking athlete? And I think that is honestly a determining factor when you're talking about Hall of Fame status.
The better-looking athlete of who? Kyle Korver or Carmelo?
Yeah.
Early in his career, Carmelo Anthony by far.
I'm talking about the whole body of work.
Carmelo Anthony because Kyle Korver has never in his entire career been a dynamic athlete. What are you saying?
But he's sexy.
What are you saying?
And that man can splash a three like no one's business.
He can. And apparently so can Carmelo because he just dropped 18.
That's not good enough.
I want you to pull up Kyle Korver's career stats. I'm going to pull up Carmelo Anthony's career stats, so we're going to compare right now.
Ready? Okay. I'll tell you what, though. Like you said, I don't think that Carmelo Anthony can really do anything to turn around his career in Portland. He was kind of a bottom feeder this year, at least to start off the year. It's going to be tough for him to
work it. I mean, nobody's expecting him to go there and, like, be the man. Like,
I'm not saying that. It was a question, like, could he make something
different?
Yeah,
it wasn't a good one either.
Okay, fine. Career or, like, the past?
Oh, I'm looking career. No, I'm looking career. Carmelo Anthony, his career points per game, 24. Let's see, career field goal percentage, 45. Career three-point percentage, a whopping 35%.
It's kind of bad.
You give me your boy Kyle's numbers right now.
9.8 points a game. A 3 rebounds a game, which for Kyle Korver, that's honestly astounding. 1.7 assists per game, good, because he likes to keep the ball and keep it for himself. He's a confident man. Shoots 42.9% from 3, 87.7 from the charity stripe. I mean, this guy is, wow. He's the whole package.
What's Kyle Korver's field goal percentage?
44.2.
That's terrible.
What is Melo's?
44.9.
Okay, yeah, but my man's jacking up threes a lot more than Carmelo is.
Yeah, I've had enough of that tape.
Oh, you want to hear his nicknames? They have his nicknames. Threesus and Machine Gun. That makes me like him 10 times more. Kyle Elliott Korver.
Ready? For Mello. Mello, Hoodie Mello, Sweet Melon. Okay. I have never once in my life heard anybody call Carmelo Anthony Sweet Melon.
Well, Sweet Melon's got a fresh start in Portland. We'll see what he can do with that.
Yeah, and the NBA, we told you that he's the biggest storyline of the NBA, but we've seen a lot of the young players, because Carmelo Anthony, as everybody knows, is 47 years old.
Basically.
And all of these young guys that have come on to play, a few of these I know you're going to like very much, some yes. more than others.
Yes, sir.
We've known for a long time about guys like Luka Doncic and Trae Young. They're very good for their respective teams, but some of the other players from that 2018 class are really starting to come alive. And we're gonna start with the non-Michigan guys because, you know, why wouldn't we?
Why wouldn't we?
Wendell Carter, scoring 14.6 points per game, 9.4 rebounds. Couldn't even tell you what team he plays for, but those are good numbers.
Chicago Bulls, baby. Oh. I remember when he got drafted.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Mitchell Robinson, 10.2 points per game, 6.3 rebounds on 19 minutes per game.
That's pretty good. 19 minutes per game, that kind of averages. I have never heard of this guy before, but he plays for the Knicks apparently, and that's, I mean... You're doing that with the Knicks.
I mean, this is where you come for your best source information, right around these parts, I'm telling you what.
Yeah, I tell you what. 19 minutes, though, with a crappy organization, dropping 10.2 points.
And then I'm just going to give the reins over to you for these last two, because I know you're going to want to talk about them more than I'm going to want to talk about them.
Okay, our third candidate is Moritz Wagner from the University of Michigan, dropping 12.8 points, 5.7 rebounds, again on only 19 minutes of action. That's pretty damn good. Not to mention, he leads the NBA. I bet you didn't know this. Leads the NBA in shooting percentage. Whole NBA. That's pretty impressive. And then also, he doesn't just do it on the offensive end. Opposing players have hit just 42% of their shots against him, which is fifth best among players who have challenged at least 4 shots a game. This man is the entire package, and I would want him on my team. I can say that much for sure.
If you're going to throw Kyle Korver in the Hall of Fame, you might as well throw him in there, too.
Why not, honestly, if we're cooking that much. And then my last guy, who is Kyle Korver-esque, Duncan Robinson, who is a great story. He's a D3 transfer who went to Michigan, played well at Michigan, but not ever elite, and then somehow, you know, made it to the NBA, worked his way up to the ranks, and is really shining this season. He's dropping 11.2 points per game, shooting 44% from three. And just Wednesday night, he hit 8 threes in the first half against a John Beilein-coached Cavaliers team. I saw a video clip of Duncan Robinson getting an open look from three, and before it even went in, John Beilein threw his hands up in the air because he knew it was about to happen. Duncan Robinson is the new Kyle Korver, I might even say, so I'm pretty impressed with that.
Yeah, but he's kind of ugly.
No. If you're going to talk about ugly, Mo Wagner's ugly. Duncan Robinson, he's not too bad looking.
A dapper young man.
He's dapper, yeah. Dapper's a good word for it, I think.
Yeah, well, enough of the NBA talk.
And that is all we got for the NBA. I had
quite enough of that. Half of the segment was about Michigan. Like, that was just a train wreck from start to finish.
I'd like to see you do better.
Talked far too much about Kyle Korver and even Carmelo Anthony. I'll throw him in there.
I feel like no matter what we talk about in the NBA, it somehow comes around to Kyle Korver. He's the mecca of NBA basketball.
So instead, let's talk about Myles Garrett.
Ah.
As we talked about him last week. His suspension, which we talked about last year, last week he was appealing. It has been upheld. He is still suspended indefinitely, with the minimum being the rest of the season, regular season and postseason, should the Browns go that far, which they probably won't. But the new update to the story that's headline news today, and especially in 2019, in this level of culture that we have, he claimed Mason Rudolph, the quarterback that he borderline assaulted with a helmet, used racial slurs against him, which provoked his actions. I don't know how to come at this because this is something that it adds so many levels to this that I don't exactly know where to start. I guess you could start by saying that certainly changes things a little bit because that's something that is not that's not going to fly, especially in today's culture, like I said.
Well, I mean, it's a serious accusation and it definitely shouldn't be taken lightly, but it kind of, to me, it kind of puts a little bit of a halt on my support of Myles Garrett, if there even was any to begin with, because if that is the case, which it could be, why would you not be saying that from the beginning, and why would you only be bringing this up now, like when you're, you know, on death's door in terms of your suspension? I feel like you would try to explain that right away, being like, hey, this dude said some pretty messed up stuff to me. it's only coming to light now that he has to make his case for it.
From what I've heard from multiple sources, actually, is that Myles Garrett chose not to say, if you go listen to his post-game interview after that, amongst all the apologies and everything that he said, he did mention, he said that there was something that provoked him. He didn't mention it then. He chose to mention it during his appeals process because he thought that it was going to be private, not located by the media. He thought that it was going to be something between him and the NFL, because I don't think that he really wanted this to go public at all because of the storm that surrounds it. And I'm assuming that if he has any, I mean, I don't think you'd have any consideration for a guy if he called you a racial slur, but if he was concerned about Mason Rudolph at all, the level of damage that can do to a guy's reputation, especially in today's climate, I think he thought about that to at least some extent, and that's why he chose to do it the way that he did it and the time that he did it.
Honestly, I think that regardless of whether or not he's telling the truth, it just makes the situation even worse than it already was, because if he was telling the truth, that means Mason Rudolph is, you know, got some racist tendencies, or at the very least lost his cool. And if he's not telling the truth, then Myles Garrett's a liar. So whichever way you spin this, it's
just not
good.
Look at this from the multiple angles. If Myles Garrett's telling the truth, or if he's telling the truth and Mason Rudolph is lying, because Mason Rudolph has categorically denied it, as you would, because there's really no proof about it, so it's a he said, he said type deal. If Myles Garrett is telling the truth and Mason Rudolph gets caught, then that's likely the end of Mason Rudolph's NFL career, and we're definitely going to more or less give Myles Garrett a pass on what he did.
I think despite, he'd still get a suspension. He will. Dome the dude in the head with
He will, but despite all of that, like I still think that we're gonna as a society kind of give him a pass on that, even though he did blatantly. I mean, he apologized for his actions profusely. Like he's obviously not happy about what he did. If Mason Rudolph is telling the truth and he said nothing, Myles Garrett lied about it, then I think the anvil needs to come down even heavier on Myles Garrett, because that is a heavy accusation that cannot be taken lightly, and you can't just say that flippantly if it's not true. So that's a major situation. And then, I mean, there's also the situation where we just never know, and then how is this going to weigh on the legacies of both players, really? Because if you take what Myles Garrett said at face value, like I said, then everybody's going to turn on Mason Rudolph all of a sudden. If you take what Mason Rudolph says at face value, then everybody's going to kind of turn back on Myles Garrett and go at him even harder than they already have. So it's kind of a little bit of a no-win situation all the way around.
Well, unless one of these players or one of the players surrounding them were mic'd up, which I don't think anyone was.
They weren't. There was no on-field sound for that game.
Yeah, so we'll never really know, I guess, what happened. But I don't think it's going to play a huge factor into how we remember these players unless more egregious behavior occurs in the future. Because, I mean, while this was one of the more egregious instances of on-field activity between players, we saw Andre Johnson and Courtland Finnegan go at it, and they're not...
They got fines, no suspensions.
Right, but they were chucking each other's helmets and beating on each other, and we don't remember those players for that. I mean, maybe Courtland Finnegan because he wasn't really that great, but Andre Johnson certainly not. I mean, that's at least not how I remember those players. So I guess if we see more of this type of action from either one of these two players, then maybe that will, you know, this
be their legacy. Right, a bit of a Richie Incognito situation.
Right. But, I mean, if they just continue...
Or a Vontaze Burfict situation. Yeah.
It's back to my theory that if you play really well in the NFL, people have really short memories as to what you do outside of your actual play. And I think that holds true here.
Yeah. It does. What kind of gets lost in all of this, and what I thought was the funniest part about everything, is that Maurkice Pouncey somehow got his suspension reduced.
I don't know how.
Despite absolutely wailing on Myles Garrett, throwing punches, haymakers over the top. Like, I mean, just egregious. And the camera is pinned right on him, watching him do the whole thing. And somehow he saw his suspension get decreased the game, which is just the greatest scam of all time, I think.
The more I watch the video, the more I'm like, how are we not talking about what Pouncey did? I mean, that dude was straight up attacking Myles Garrett.
He was going at it.
Yeah.
He was going at it. A bit of a more lukewarm subject now. We got fantasy updates that we want to talk about. Very quickly for me, my team's 7-4. I'm about to go into the playoffs. Hopefully, I'm falling apart a bit. My team's very injury-prone. And everything that has happened coming into this past week, which I lost to the worst team in our entire league.
Love to hear it.
Yeah, not great. So I am limping down the stretch, but I think we're going to be all right.
I am currently 6-5 coming off of a win. I'm one of those teams that's vying for a playoff spot. At this point, I need to take care of business this week. I'm playing against another 6-5 team. If I can pull that off, I should be in. And once I'm in the playoffs, you already know what it is. I'm going to run the table, win the whole thing, because that's just what I do. It's just a matter of getting in at this point. And I'm looking in pretty good shape. Most of my players have gotten their buys out of the way, and so we're ready to go.
You have any Lions players on your team, like at all?
I do not, actually.
That's probably good for you, because the guy...
They suck.
Well, not only that, the guy who is supposed to be getting them the ball is going to be out for the third straight week this week against the Washington Redskins.
True story.
So, any of you Matthew Stafford fantasy owners, you are not going to be happy, because he... If I had it my way, he would probably sit out the rest of the season. And, yeah, he's sitting out again this week, Jeff Driscoll, his replacement. We kind of take him for granted as Lions fan. I'm telling you what... And I don't know about we, because I think we recognize his greatness, but I think most Lions fans really don't recognize what he brings to the table. And this Lions team just has no chance without him, zero.
No, Jeff Driscoll
hasn't even played that poorly, but they still have zero chance without him.
Jeff Driscoll has done about as well as you could hope Jeff Driscoll could do. I mean, I don't think he's had very limited action before this point, but he's playing the best that I've ever seen Jeff Driscoll play. But he's no Matthew Stafford, and it's pretty evident with his command on the field. We miss Matthew Stafford immensely, and honestly, it's going to be a sad day for Detroit sports when he retires.
I mean, I can see the writing on the wall. This is going to be the Calvin Johnson, Barry Sanders situation all over again.
Yeah.
The beating that he's taken on his body over his 10-year career, like, they don't seem close to winning. They don't at all. This is exactly why Calvin Johnson left, because the Lions don't seem like winning, or they don't seem close to winning. And it sucks, because he is an all-time great Detroit Lion and probably an all-time great Detroit sports athlete altogether. And we are wasting away his career. And it sucks. It's tragic, because it's, you know, you never like to see that for a guy of that caliber.
Where does he rank on your all-time Lions?
That's a great question. Probably top 15.
Really? That low?
Top 10, top 15.
I would have assumed higher than that.
He might be. Barry Sanders.
I think it goes Barry Sanders, Calvin Johnson, Matthew Stafford.
Herman Moore.
Yeah, I mean, you can put Billy Sims in that conversation, too.
I'm trying to think of who else. He's certainly top
5, I think.
Top 5, you think so?
I think so.
I would put him at top 10, certainly.
I mean, there's not a lot. I mean, you got, like, Bobby Lane.
From the 1950s, which, like, I can't accurately, like, measure his talent level, because I've never seen him touch a football.
I mean,
so
Detroit sports has not been a mecca for elite talent. Although I will say they have arguably the best running back and wide receiver of all time, and they have not been able to put anything together in terms of a team coordinated effort. But that's neither here nor there. That's a conversation for a different day.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about this anymore. I hate the Lions so much, and I love them, and I can't quit watching them. And Detroit sports is a mess, but everybody already knew that.
What a conundrum.
Segment 2, we're coming at you. This is the Trial Run Podcast. Segment 2, time now for This Week in History. Go at it, Brennan.
This is a great one, actually. This Week in History, in 1955, the city of Ada, Oklahoma, started offering citizens $5 if they caught some of their own members of their town jaywalking. We could make a big profit at Central if we did that, I think.
That's a bit of a Sean Payton situation there.
Yeah.
Bounty,
yeah.
Yeah, they got dollars and cents on people's heads there in Ada, Oklahoma.
A town
that I've never heard of.
I almost went with the JFK assassination, but I just didn't think it was appropriate.
Oh, it's appropriate. It's just too mainstream.
it's too mainstream. We'd much rather hear about jaywalking.
Yeah, you don't want to do that for the clout.
Yeah, that's right.
That's just too much. Let's talk about the corrupt NCAA, which seems to be one of our favorite topics.
It really does. Honestly, if you are tuning into this podcast regularly, you know that we're basically an NCAA bashing podcast.
Yeah, and we talked about James Wiseman last week, suspended 12 games, as it turns out. And maybe the most egregious punishment I have ever seen is they are making him donate $11,500 to a charity of his choice to repay the alleged $11,500 that he got from Penny Hardaway. And if that's not the most NCAA thing I've ever seen, then I don't know what is. I can't believe they're actually making a kid like that pay damn near $12,000 back to back to the system, I suppose.
I mean, where's this dude going to, like, how is he going to get
this
money?
Who has $11,500 just lying around?
Just, like, to pull out of his ass, like, oh, here you go, like, here's some money. Like, he's a college kid. The dude's eating, like, ramen noodles every night.
That's what I'm saying. The game's, like, if you want to suspend him, fine. 12 games is not going to affect his career at all. To dock him and I guess probably his family $11,500, like, I don't know what family can just, like, flippantly afford $11,500. That's essentially a fine, right? Like, when you think about it. Like, I don't understand. Doesn't make any sense.
And considering he took the money in the first place, he probably needed it. So if he's having to pay $11,000 now, like, that's not money that he just has lying around, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they'll be able to go on, like, a payment plan or something, but that's ridiculous to me.
Yeah. I don't know. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But college basketball, for as much as we've bashed the NCAA, we still love college basketball. And, you know, we got the 2K Empire Classic coming up in New York, actually happening right now as we speak. Duke against Georgetown. Lots of big stuff on the line for Madison Square Garden. Madison Square Garden is Duke's home away from home, I feel like.
It basically is, at least this season.
I feel like they play there more than they play at Cameron Indoor. And it's something that we're getting into that time of year where the mini tournaments are kicking off. Lots of great matchups. Beautiful stuff to watch. And I can't wait to watch some more of this in the upcoming days, the upcoming weeks. And what's the most exciting matchup that you're looking for as we come into the early season tournaments?
Honestly, the only one that I am very familiar with is Battle for Atlantis, simply because Michigan's in it. So, you know, that's that. But it is a good matchup. You have Iowa State, who's in that region. You got North Carolina, who's a solid team. I think those are both ranked teams facing off with Michigan. A couple other solid organizations who I cannot name off the top of my head, but I'm looking forward to that matchup. Really, this is one of the best times in basketball other than March Madness itself and conference tournament play, simply because you're getting some of these non-conference teams together and they're playing really good other teams from other conferences,
yeah.
And I'm excited for it at least.
Yeah, we saw Duke and Georgetown kind of duke it out to the wire, and Duke pulling ahead at the end and essentially winning a game against a Georgetown team that's not what they used to be, but it's still very exciting to watch early in the season. We've seen, you know, this isn't necessarily in tournament play, but the thing that I love about NCAA basketball is that it's very unpredictable at times, and we've seen Kentucky struggle early this season. Like, there's a lot of stuff to look forward to in this basketball season.
The other Battle for Atlantis teams I have them now are Oregon, I think, who's ranked, Seton Hall.
Seton Hall is a very good
team. They're a very good team, and Gonzaga is another solid organization, so should be good.
Should be, and what wasn't good was the L that our boys took yesterday in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I was actually, I was there. I was in attendance for the game.
The Fighting Chips.
We had them in the first half, I ain't gonna lie.
Not gonna lie.
And by first half, I mean the first half of the first half. We hung in there. They pulled away at the end of the first half, and we could never recover. Played very poorly. We'll be fine. We're gonna be fine. Minnesota is a good team that they've ran into a couple of tough teams early in the season. But we're going to be fine. I'm telling you right now. I believe it. You better believe it. And Central Michigan, tourney bound this year. You heard it here first.
Do you think we have what it takes to win the MAC?
I think so.
Really?
I really do. I really.
Who's our biggest challenger? Is it Buffalo again?
I think Buffalo probably. I believe Toledo. Who did Toledo beat the other night?
No, they hung it close with Notre Dame.
They did. And they lost to Notre Dame. Yep. On the biggest, I mean, one of the craziest plays I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Toledo. So I think Toledo's going to be very formidable. Buffalo's going to be a good team. But I think Central can hang in there with anybody. Bowling Green should be good again. They were pretty decent last year. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to be okay. Let's all take a deep breath. I know we lost to a Big Ten opponent that should be beatable. But this coming week, we have DePaul on the schedule. But we still have Texas, Purdue. Lots of big marquee matchups to see in the future that, you know, if we can win at least one of those, we'll be in great shape.
Trust in Keno Davis and his jumpsuit. And his wandering, too.
That's it. That's 100% correct. All right. Last subject of the day, and maybe our favorite subject of the week. Let's talk college football.
Oh, yes.
And let's talk Penn State versus Ohio State. The biggest game by far this week, with massive implications in the Big Ten. And probably playoff implications, at least on Ohio State's side. And probably Penn State's side if they can somehow win this game.
Yep.
James Franklin somehow is pulling his non-existent hair out right now, because this is one of the this is one of those games where he needs to win at Penn State if he wants to be an elite program. And he said it before, and I'm sure he'll say it again if they lose to Ohio State. This is a must-have game for Penn State, not only just in this season, but for the entire program as a whole.
Yeah, it really is. Penn State, Ohio State's kind of been a thorn in the side of Penn State. They did win at Penn State in the whiteout game in 2016, but since that point, Ohio State has beaten Penn State two straight years by 1 point. And in both of those games, it looked like Penn State was going to seal the deal and then lost late. And yeah, like you mentioned, James Franklin said at the end of last year's game that Penn State's a really good team at this point, but they aren't an elite team. And he also said that one of Penn State's measuring sticks to be an elite team is that Ohio State game. So if they do want to be a playoff team this year and really in the future, they have to get over that hump in Ohio State.
Do you give Penn State any chance in this game?
I don't, because I don't think that Penn State is as good as some think they are. I think that Penn State is a really solid team, but I don't think, obviously, that they're that elite team. And I don't even think that they might not even be a top 10 team by the time it's all said and done.
In the final weeks of the season, Ohio State, clearly they play Penn State this Saturday, but they also play Michigan. Who do you think has the better chance to win that game against Ohio State, Michigan or Penn State?
I think Michigan and Penn State are actually very close in terms of how good they are. I might give Michigan the advantage from a purely analytical perspective, just because it's a home game for Michigan and it's a rivalry game. Ohio State Penn State is kind of becoming a rivalry, but I think the home field advantage for Michigan gives them a slight edge. But I think Ohio State's going to win both of these games by a 2-touchdown margin at least.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
And speaking of winning by big margins, we've got Alabama on the docket also, with Tua Tagovailoa now being out officially for the entire season, and we'll probably never see him lace him up for Alabama ever again.
Yeah.
And we certainly shouldn't. Do you think Alabama, and the reason I segued like that is because we've seen Alabama just run roughshod over everybody but LSU this year, and it's something where they're probably a good enough team without Tua, but it's certainly going to make it much more difficult. And do they still have a road to the playoff, and are they still favorites to be in the playoff come that time?
I mean, we'll see what Mac Jones can give them at quarterback. Like we mentioned last week on the podcast, it's a totally different offense.
Oh, totally
different. It's night and day between Mac Jones and Tua Tagovailoa. So I truly, if it was my decision, unless Alabama showed something crazy in the final stretch, I wouldn't put Alabama in. I think their last two games are against, I believe, Western Kentucky and then
Western Carolina.
Oh, so even worse.
Yeah.
Western Carolina and then Auburn, who is a good team, but they're 7-3. So to me, I don't know how they're going to be able to prove to the committee that they are a good enough team to make it if they aren't in the top four as of right now.
What if they win by 200 over the three-win over the three-win FCS program of Western Carolina?
200? Yeah, I mean, at that point, if you can put up 200 against a team, you probably deserve to be in the playoff.
They might. And, yeah, they don't have a whole lot of power left in their schedule. They need LSU to lose. Like, if LSU doesn't lose and if Alabama can't get into the championship game, I don't even think at this point if LSU loses one game that's going to matter, because they're going to have this tiebreak over Alabama. Yeah. So, essentially, LSU needs to lose two games and Alabama needs to win out, which I can just not see happening. So
I don't think they're going to make
the playoff. The road to the playoff is tough for them. Very difficult.
Although the ESPN indicator, I think it has them as like a 70% chance of making the playoff, which I don't really get.
Which is kind of bizarre.
Unless something crazy happens, which it could, I don't really see them making
it. There are crazy things that could happen. One of the crazy scenarios that we've talked about before, this has nothing to do with Alabama, of course, but could Georgia make it this year if they lose to Texas? Because Texas A&M is a losable game. Like, they could lose that game. If Georgia, because they've already clinched the SEC East, if they lose that game to Texas A&M but end up winning the SEC and beating LSU, are they going to be the first two-loss team to get into the playoff? And will they get in over Alabama?
It kind of depends, I think, on a lot of different things. It kind of depends on what happens in other conferences, and it depends on how much they, A, lose to Texas A&M by, and B, how much they beat LSU by in the SEC championship game. I'll tell you what, though, if that scenario plays out and Oregon runs the table from here on out, Oregon's going to go. Like, there's no way they don't, I don't think. You can't have a one-loss Pac-12 champion who beats a top 10 team in Utah and their only loss comes week one against a solid SEC team and then not put them in the playoffs if that situation occurs. So I don't think Georgia would make in that scenario. I think that it would require
some magic to happen.
Some magic to happen, to say the least. And I don't think it's going to happen this year that is a two-loss team making the playoffs. But I think that could happen in the future.
Yeah.
If the scenario is
right. It could. It certainly could. But the scenario has to be right. The stars kind of have to align in that situation. This is going to be an elite week. I'm telling you what. Oklahoma State. You got the whatever that's called. The why am I blanking on this? Their rivalry.
Some rivalry.
It's some rivalry. The Cincinnati-Memphis, a great game in the American Conference. Ohio State-Michigan coming up in a few weeks. Alabama-Auburn. Wisconsin-Minnesota. I mean, it's all happening. It's happening.
We got to slug through Week 13, which, I mean, has some good matchups, but not elite. But Week 14, I cannot wait for. It's going to be really good.
Oh, by the way, it just came to my head. Bedlam.
Bedlam, yes.
Oklahoma
yes,
State.
Yes, very good.
I really just pulled that out of thin air. And then, of course, we got our boys on the home front, Central Michigan University. They need to take care of business against Toledo in this upcoming week. And Western Michigan, that team down south, they need to lose to Northern Illinois. To the boys in DeKalb County, in DeKalb, Illinois, I am begging you, please can you beat them? Because I want to go to a MAC championship so bad. I'm begging you. That's all I ask.
That would be great. From 1-11 to MAC champions, wow.
What a story.
What a storyline.
Time for Who's Your Daddy of the Week. Who you got?
My Who's Your Daddy of the Week is Trevor Lawrence is school project's daddy of the week. I saw that. All over Twitter, Trevor Lawrence had a PowerPoint presentation on how his hair looks this good, and that deserves an A+ in my book. Very impressive, Trevor.
My Who's Your Daddy of the Week is actually going to be a future Who's Your Daddy of the Week. Ooh. It is going to be Central Michigan University over DePaul University.
Wow.
In basketball, they play this week, and I can't wait until we bring home that big dub, and we are going to start building our tournament resume right away.
Amazing.
Beautiful.
What a show. Look, we had a long show for you last week. We got a short show for you this week.
Yeah. We reciprocate. We do what we got to do. We won't be on next week. We got Thanksgiving, but we will be back before Christmas break starts. I believe we'll have two more episodes before that point.
Probably so.
And then we'll be on a nice hiatus, and we will be back after that. Maybe.
Maybe.
You never know. It's a trial run.